from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Governor Gavin Newsom is delivering his first State of the State address in about an hour. He's expected to explain his decision to recall hundreds of National Guard members from the Mexican border in defiance of President Trump. Governor Newsom will also likely talk about the state budget and his proposals on affordable housing and early childhood education. We'll preview the speech and we'll get your thoughts on what California's priorities should be. What do you want to hear the governor address? That's coming up after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In less than an hour, Governor Gavin Newsom is set to deliver his first State of the State address, and we're going to preview the speech with Marisa Lagos, correspondent in KQED's California Politics and Government Desk and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown podcast, and Katie Orr, politics and government reporter for KQED. And we're going to check in with other experts throughout the hour, and we want to hear from you. What are your priorities for the state, and what do you want to hear Governor Newsom address? You can give us a call now at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. That number again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org. Welcome, Marisa Lagos.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you, and welcome, Katie Orr.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Katie, let me begin with you. Governor Newsom has said that the border crisis is just a manufactured crisis. California won't be part of this political theater. So he's going to be expected to say something in defiance of President Trump and really about National Guard deployment cutbacks.
Yeah, absolutely. He gave the media a preview of that yesterday. And I just want to clarify, as you can hear, I'm actually in the assembly, the California Assembly, where Newsom will be speaking. So that's what you're
hearing. That's good ambient noise, yeah.
Yes. I think that's the thing. Newsom is definitely, we knew he's always taken maybe a more controversial or stringent stance towards President Trump, maybe a little more outspoken than Governor Jerry Brown had been. And this is certainly not going to be any exception. As we heard in his news conference yesterday, he called it a manufactured crisis. He said California is not going to take part in a political theater. And he has already announced that he will only keep 100 troops at the border. They will be tasked with narcotic search and seizures, but he'll only keep them there if the federal government agrees to keep paying for them. He says, you know, if not, forget it. We'll redeploy them to other parts of the state.
What about troops for wildfire prevention and CAL FIRE?
That's right. So he's taking, of the 360 troops there, he's leaving 100 at the border. He's taking about 100, and they're going to be training with CAL FIRE to for the upcoming fire season, doing a lot of basically prevention work, making sure there's a lot of defensible space, things like that. And then there will be about 150 who will work with the National Guard's drug task force, and they will be primarily cracking down on illegal marijuana grows in Northern California, which Newsom said yesterday are getting worse, not better, and of course have devastating environmental impacts for those areas. So they will be refocusing their efforts on those two missions.
So that's a big headline, Marisa Lagos, in terms of what's being done with troops, but also Governor Newsom has pledged to do a great deal on housing and new housing and affordable housing. What do we expect?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is kind of the question. I do believe we'll probably see a little of both, that, you know, he will want to really underscore this position that he's taking against the president, which of course has been supported by over two dozen lawsuits filed by our attorney general here in California. And then I think he'll want to pivot to the things that he wants to talk about and the things that he promised on the campaign trail. Housing is a big one. We saw his administration file suit a couple weeks ago against Huntington Beach for not meeting its housing goals, which was a pretty big thing for the state to do. You know, usually these discussions happen behind closed doors. I think it indicated how seriously he's taking the state's really, you know, dearth of housing production that we've seen. It's really fallen behind in its own stated goals.
He he's called it appalling. And what about 100,000? You said we get to, he's talking about numbers in the millions.
Yeah, he wants to build 3.5 million homes. And yeah, it's true. On a state level, on a local level, we have not reached any of our housing goals in recent years. And I think that, you know, we're all feeling the crunch of that. Homelessness is another huge issue facing the state. I mean, I'll be watching to see if he delves into this whole PG&E issue around the wildfire question. You know, he has really stood up and made the case to the bankruptcy court after PG&E filed for bankruptcy last month that shareholders, wildfire victims should be part of that. So I'll be watching carefully to see if that's part of what he tackles. And then, you know, there's all of the other sort of things that he really campaigned on around education, early childhood development.
We've been hearing from Ted Limbert lately, later in the program, president of Children Now, who have given them high marks in terms of expectations.
Yeah, so I think that this will be probably, if his budget and inauguration were any indication, we should expect maybe a longer speech than we would have had from our previous governor, who usually kept it pretty short. And a lot of ambition here. You know, I think that Newsom is trying to both stand up to Trump, but I would not expect that that's all the speech will be.
We can necessarily expect any Latin phrases like we used to get out of his predecessor?
Probably less likely to hear some Latin phrases, but, you know, he's been known to bring in some pop culture references, so maybe something a little more now, let's say.
Katie, he's also pledged to build, and certainly Jerry Brown got high marks for this, largest fiscal reserve in history, and I wonder what we're going to hear on that score. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's something that Newsom is really stressing in his first term here as governor. I think he very much is aware of the fact that people saw Jerry Brown as being this fiscal conservative. And there were some concerns that when Newsom took over and had a Democratic Senate and Assembly supermajority with him, that they were going to kind of go on a spending spree and go crazy. And he has made made it a priority to show that that is not where he is going. In his budget proposal, he proposes paying down some of the state's retirement debt. He is putting more money into the reserves because he is aware that a slowdown might be coming in the next couple of years. And so this is something that he's trying to, I think it's almost like Jerry Brown was seen as the adult in the room. And I think Newsom is very eager that people see him that way as well.
Well, you know, I was looking at a rainy day chart here in California. We have 22 days that we could exist and continue under the rainy day funds that we have. In Texas, it's 70. In Alaska, it's 382. So there's a kind of a stretch here in Governor Newsom's ambitions, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, it is a big reserve. He had put about $14 billion into the state's reserve. That's what the LAO had put it at. And I think, though, you make a good point. I mean, there are a lot of people that live in California, and there are a lot of programs that Democrats would love to see happen. You know, he's talked about universal preschool. He's talked about phasing in single-payer health care systems. You know, there is a free community college for he wants to extend that for a second year. So it's going to be a balancing act, as it always is. But there are a lot of wants from Democratic lawmakers here. You know, a lot of programs are still recovering from the recession, particularly in the area of early childhood, which is a priority for him. But again, you know, a downturn likely will happen. And I think nobody wants to be in the position that they were in 08 when they just had to slash funding for the state. And, you know, we're still trying to recover from that.
Now, we think about the Great Recession, Marisa. We think about all that loss of jobs. And Governor Newsom has certainly said that he wants to kind of reconstitute and create a great deal of productive and well-paying jobs and actually bring up wages. So there's a whole ambitious array of things here. You know, I mean, it's pretty extraordinary in terms of what he's just laid out.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that this all underscores is, you know, our volatile tax system. We have a pretty progressive tax system, but it relies very heavily, because of that progressivity, on high wage earners and people with a lot of money. And we see that during economic downturns that we really get hit hard because, you know, of capital gains and other things like that. And so I think one thing for this speech, but also just looking forward to the next 2 years that I'm going to be also watching carefully for, is where does this governor play on things like the 2020 ballot measure pushed by labor that would exempt commercial properties from Prop 13? And that was, of course, the 1978 ballot measure that limits property tax increases very severely. And, you know, folks on the left want to take out commercial properties and say that, you know, only agriculture and homeowners and other folks can benefit from that. That's been long seen as a third rail of politics in California. And so is that something that the governor engages on? Does he negotiate with those labor members and, you know, either support that ballot measure or alternate legislation so that it's not on the 2020 ballot? I think that there's a lot of sort of bigger picture questions that Newsom has yet to completely engage on. He sort of dipped the toe in saying, I want to have these conversations. I think he seems more willing than Jerry Brown was to, you know, maybe walk and chew gum at the same time. I think Brown was very focused on obviously righting the ship economically because he came in during the recession, but then on a sort of a handful of policy proposals, including climate change and criminal justice. Newsom, I think, is trying to be a little more sweeping, which, of course, brings with it both benefits and challenges. And so, you know, those are things that I think you might want to read between the lines a little and see if he gives us any sort of breadcrumbs as to where he's going on those bigger issues.
No, he's definitely has a wider canvas and a wider list of things that he's aiming for. Brown was more piecemeal in that mm-hmm. sense. And actually, you mentioned Prop 13. There's a tweet from a listener who says, I'd like to hear Newsom talk about the repeal of Prop 13 and banning foreign nationals from buying up property and then leaving it empty. You may have your own thoughts about priorities for the governor's speech, which we will hear soon after this program ends. And what he is saying and ought to be saying in his State of the State speech, you can give us a call now at 866-733-6786 and let us know what your thoughts are. And let me go to a caller here. Let's bring in a caller from San Mateo. John, you're on. Morning.
I'm sorry. Is that for John?
If you are John, you are on.
Yes, thank you. You're cut out for just a second. Yeah, my position is that any perceived housing crisis is purely a manufactured one. The crisis, as I see it, and I'm a lifelong 60-year-old resident of California, the crisis, as I see it, is just a tremendous overglut of office building. Construction and zoning has not been in proportion. If we were to take half the offices that have been built, which is in the millions of square feet, and convert that over to residential, we would be fine. Build out residential in balance with the offices. I do not agree that California is under any obligation or has any benefit whatever to house every single person on the planet that wants to live here. Is the end game to make us look like Manhattan from the north to the southern border?
All right. I will let that comment stand for now, but I don't know if Marisa or Katie want to respond to it. Marisa, you look a little chomping at the bit here. Go ahead.
I just think that he's right in the sense that we have particularly some cities and counties and pockets of the state. I think Silicon Valley has come under scrutiny for this and in some parts of it that has been happy to embrace office housing, business, you know, that sort of construction, and maybe not as willing to embrace new residents. Which is sort of the other thing he touches on. But, you know, at the end of the day here, I mean, we live in a city where the median price of a home is well over $1 million, where rents have more than doubled in recent years. And so I do think that we're not just talking about, you know, new people coming to California. We're talking about whether those of us who were born and raised here, like myself, can afford to stay here. And I do think that that's something that the state has, that it's become more of a conversation, especially since redevelopment was eliminated under Jerry Brown, about what the state role is. And it may not be to actually fund and build all that housing, but it might be to offer incentives to local governments to approve more zoning for housing. It might be, in some cases, to help subsidize the building of, you know, lower income or affordable housing. One thing we've seen in San Francisco is that there's a lot of you know, a lot of housing has been built for people who can afford market rate, which is very high here.
Which has led to an enormous number of displacements. And also, Gavin Newsom talked about homelessness a lot, and he said it's an epidemic.
Yeah, well, and if you walk outside, you'll see that's true. I mean, one of the problems here is that we don't have, you know, I think historically we really focused on very low-income housing, but the middle class is being squeezed down. And one of the things we saw in San Francisco that's been, you know, a topic of discussion is in terms of permitting, are they permitting, you know, houses that families can live in? Because a lot of these even, you know, condo developments, one bedrooms, studios are more attractive for a variety of reasons. And so once you do permit those, how much interaction is there? I mean, I think that the zoning question and that lawsuit I mentioned is going to be a really fascinating one to watch because Newsom, you know, does come from the private sector before he entered government, but also I think sees a role that maybe Brown was not as apt to see.
Getting some comments. A listener writes, the middle class is bankrolling the poor. This cannot continue. Kurt writes, Newsom has an obligation to provide security and safety for the citizens of his state. That is the highest priority. He is shirking it. And again, you can add your voice here by either emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum. Let me go to Ted Lempert, who I mentioned is going to join us briefly here. He's president of Children Now. They're a national research and advocacy organization based in Oakland. Ted, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it.
Appreciate your being with us. You guys are kind of applauding this ProKed investment in support and services that we're hearing that Gavin Newsom is going to lay out in the state of the state.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at, you know, poverty and inequality in our state, I mean, one of the areas where California has really been failing is its kids, and that starts early. And, you know, one thing, unfortunately, Governor Brown didn't prioritize is early childhood and making sure every child has the supports they need to have a shot as they grow up. So we're really thrilled with Governor Newsom's initial budget and how he's been talking about ensuring that, you know, families have access to quality childcare, preschool, and needed health supports, you know, especially early on in their life.
Yeah, it's also cradle to career in terms of investments. The program he's laid out, though, has caused some controversy. I'd like you to talk about that because we're not only talking about protection of immigrant families, we're talking about essentially medical aid for the undocumented, at least young adults.
Yeah, I would hope to say that that's an issue that, I know it's not unanimous, but, you know, we've sort of moved past in California. I mean, even Governor Schwarzenegger, Governor Davis, and certainly Governor Newsom have all been saying, hey, you know, everyone in California needs to have access to health insurance, and, you know, especially our kids. And so, you know, California has been a leader in that for several years now, and it's not only a huge health risk not to make sure our kids don't have access to health care, but, you know, it's also ensuring that, you know, kids in California, you know, have a shot. So, you know, again, it's not a unanimous opinion. I think it's great that California, really on a bipartisan basis, has been a leader in saying all kids, regardless of their immigration status, should have access to health insurance and health care.
And also, when we're talking about kids, we're still at the age of 18 or 19. There's a whole plan that the governor's going to unveil, presumably, for 2 years of community college for free.
Yeah, well, and I appreciate how he's talking about cradle to career because, I mean, we look at it, California, a progressive state, a state that's been the leader in so many issues like the environment and other issues. We really have not been a leader in recent decades on our young people, and it really does require a whole child, prenatal all the way through higher ed approach. So we're thrilled that the governor's talking this way because it really where California has been falling behind. I mean, you think of this state in the 50s and 60s, and that's really setting the path for higher ed and for K-12 and for kids. We have slipped dramatically as a state in the last couple of decades. So, you know, we're really very happy with how the governor's talking about this and really cradle to career and saying we need to make sure we're giving our kids the supports, you know, all the way through the higher ed system.
Ted, before I let you go, and we're going to talk about Chris Haney later in this hour, executive director of the California Budget and Policy Center. He may have some things to say about how this money is going to be spent and where it's going to come from. But here's Joshua from your backyard in Oakland who has something to say about K-12 education and money. Joshua, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Ted is saying, I guess. And it's just that, you know, I think that students in wealthy, functional districts are getting plenty of support, But with this budget surplus, if we shouldn't be reinvesting in some of the urban and rural K-12 public school districts that are really dysfunctional and running into budget shortfalls.
Some thoughts on that from you, Ted Lempert?
Yeah, without getting too technical about it, I agree with that. And actually, the local funding formula, new education finance measure that Governor Brown pushed through, one of the downsides with that is there hasn't been the transparency and accountability to make sure the dollars are actually getting to kids in poverty and most in need. So we're hoping Governor Newsom speaks up about that, you know, not only today, but really works on ensuring that the dollars are getting to kids most in need. So I think that's a very strong point.
Ted Lempert, thank you so much for joining us. Good to have you aboard.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Ted Lempert, again, is president of Children Now, a national research and advocacy organization, and they are based in Oakland, California. Sarah writes, one of the previous callers asked whether we want to look like Manhattan. It seems to me that we are choosing to look more like Bangladesh. Oh.
I mean, you know, I do think that it's important to note the caller earlier said he was 60, and I do think that there are generational differences here, and I think part of that is because Prop 13 has been a massive sort of wealth, push that has left out younger Californians, new Californians, and really grandfathered in folks who were able to buy property 30, 40 years ago.
Katie Orr, go ahead. Yeah,
I would just add that it'll be interesting to see if Gavin Newsom addresses CEQA reform at all. Mm-hmm. You know, he has made the point, and other lawmakers have made the point that, you know, there's seems to be no problem waiving CEQA to build stadiums, you know, but every time people want to build a housing development, it's one of, you know, the big obstacles that developers face. And I think we are seeing a little bit more of a trend towards YIMBYism in the state, yes in my backyard versus no in my backyard, because people realize that
People know what NIMBY stands for, but CEQA, you might have to educate them.
Oh, CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act. It's basically pretty strict environmental regulations for development here in California. And Newsom and others have talked about lifting those to make it easier to develop housing. And that is hugely controversial, especially obviously with environmentalists and who say it does things like protect our coasts and our environments here. But it's something that politicians are really looking at because this housing crisis has gotten so large.
Katie, we're coming up on a break, but as long as you're talking about controversies and environment, there's a new fee proposal that's in the works, I think, which would be a tax for safe drinking water. And this has got a lot of people worked up. I mean, 1 million Californians lack access to safe drinking water, but, certainly there are many people who just are very resistant to the idea of any kind of tax, let alone a new tax.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where people get frustrated because they feel like California, they pay a lot of taxes. So where is that money going? You know, we just passed a new gas tax or reaffirmed a new gas tax in this last election. And I hear that a lot from people, too. I already pay my taxes. Why aren't my roads fixed? And so I imagine that if this is put forward, no matter how valid it might be, of course, everyone wants people to have clean drinking water. I think it is inevitable that you will hear pushback from people who say, I am already paying you a lot of money in taxes. What are you doing with it?
Well, we are hearing that pushback, and we're also hearing from other listeners. Bill writes, how about protecting the public against PG&E? And Debbie says, I would hope that the governor would respect the need to keep the rainy day fund and look to Prop 13 to exempt commercial property tax. Continued reliance on individual taxation is pushing folks in my age group, boomers, to leave the state. And we'll hear from more of you when we return. Again, you can join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, anticipating the State of the State speech by Governor Gavin Newsom and wanting to hear what your priorities are. We'll also hear from Chris Haney of the California Budget and Policy Center. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny. We are talking about Governor Newsom's speech, which is coming up soon. It's the first State of the State speech by the new governor. Recalling hundreds of National Guard members from the Mexican border is sort of the big headline here, but we're really fleshing out what else is expected and what is anticipated to come out in the speech. Getting a lot of responses from you, our listeners. Michael writes, improving the health care of Californians is the key to affordable health care and insurance. My hope is that Governor Newsom supports a statewide tax system in sugary beverages to fund community food projects and other disease prevention programs. So we're hearing your priorities, and I read one before we went to the break, and that was Bill saying, how about protecting the public against PG&E? Well, how about that, Marisa Lagos?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be very interesting to see if and how the governor approaches this, both in this speech, but also moving forward. I mean, this is a huge question, right? And it is not one with any easy answers. I feel like so far in Sacramento, everyone said all options should be on the table when we talk about the future of this utility, but I haven't actually seen any of those options like get put out there yet. And so I think that it'll, you know, again, we may not get a specific proposal from Newsom today, but I think I'll be reading between the lines to see if there's any indication of where he's heading. He did just make an appointment to the State Public Utilities Commission, who is a woman who served on the Sacramento Municipal Utilities District, so a public power utility, for 20 years. So she really brings a different perspective, I would say, to the CPUC. And he also made some interesting appointments to CAISO, which oversees our electrical grid. And so I think that, you know, it is, I would be surprised if he came out today and made any sort of huge specific policy proposals around that. But I do think that fires in general and the bankruptcy of PG&E is certainly something that I would expect him to at least mention. And yeah, I just don't have any real sense of where he's going to go on it.
President Trump said he's in agreement with me, you know, in terms of what needs to be done going over to Finland and that sort of thing.
Well, Newsom, interestingly, did defend Trump's sort of, I think, what a lot of people here saw as bizarre comment about raking the forest.
Yes.
But I think, you know, Newsom so far, and it's understandable, but has focused a lot of his attention on what he can do to try to, you know, prevent fires before they start. So we talked earlier about redeploying National Guard troops to help with fire prevention. We've seen a series of laws come into effect and policy proposals out of his office to really speed up some of that forest management and other practices. But I do think that the future of the electrical grid is a huge question, and how to prevent it from continuing to start these deadly fires is something that, you know, whether he wants to or not, he's going to have to deal with.
Another huge question is high-speed rail, which, of course, Governor Jerry Brown was most in favor of, and trying to build what some called the train to nowhere. And there's Kaj who writes, you can't build the way out of the housing problem on the peninsula, but you could build a high-speed railway, not to L.A., but to Northern California, NorCal, he says. A half-hour commute could be possible between the Central Valley and Sacramento. Any thoughts, Katie Orr?
Yeah, you know, I actually asked Newsom about that when he had a press conference on his budget. And just in a note, he talked for, what, like 90 minutes at that? So yeah. That might give you a clue about what we couldn't expect here today. But he said, you know, basically more to come. He has always been more cagey about high-speed rail. It seem likely that the first segment that they are building might go ahead and get built. But is he going to go forward after that? Are we just going to have a train between basically Merced and San Jose? He has said that he is thinking about ways to maybe streamline the project, but he's more to come on that. So I don't know that we'll hear him talk a lot about that because it's not a huge priority for him. But I think the listener does bring up a good point. The Central Valley is one of the fastest growing parts of the state, mainly because it's relatively affordable compared to other places. For instance, Sacramento's housing market is on the uptick now because so many people are moving here from the Bay. So I think that is something to consider. If you can get a house in Merced and be in San Jose in, I don't know, 45 minutes or so, I think a lot of people would think that that is a trade-off that they could make.
You know, there's been a lot of contrast here coming from both of you about Governor 40 to Governor 39, his predecessor. And I like Bill Whalen's remark. He says they are as different as their hairstyles. Let me get another caller on here. Jane joining us. Jane, you're on.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for this program. And thank you for your wonderful programs, Michael. We are just beside ourselves. We attended the standing room only Blue Ribbon Commission meeting in Garberville 3.5 years ago, where Governor Newsom promised an affordable path for small stewards of the land. These are second and third generation farmers. They grow fruit, vegetables, herbs, and some cannabis. The black market in the northern counties is very robust because the state decided to incentivize agribusiness at $100,000 buy-in or plus and completely neglected us. Our surveys in the northern counties, Willits, Garberville, Ukiah, show that business in these communities is down 75% in revenue. Business owners to a one attribute the loss to the lack of small farmers' income. And as of last Thursday, when we were in Sacramento, the governor has no one in place to carry this portfolio. And with the fires on top of no more fishing and logging, the economic consequences are just devastating. The governor just sold us down the river. We actually have the transcript of that meeting, and he has just not stepped up to the plate in any way. And so what we're facing is not only economic devastation in the northern counties, Trinity, Yuba, Mendocino. We're also looking probably at fentanyl and OxyContin coming in, because that's what happens when there's no jobs. And we are disgusted.
Jane, you certainly raised a lot of indignation here and concern, and I think the rural communities are hurting, as you've said. They've been devastated by the fires and by economic downturns. Marisa or Katie, who wants to weigh in here?
Katie?
Well, I'll just say, you know, Newsom made reference to the illegal marijuana grows in Northern California in his press conference yesterday. I asked him on his way out of the press conference if he would support an effort to lower the tax on recreational cannabis right now, because it can be high as 50% depending on where you are in the state. And there have been people, you know, making efforts to talk about lowering that. He didn't really commit to anything. He said the ballot initiative, which he helped craft, Prop 64, certainly allows for that tax rate to be changed. And so I think that is a real discussion that we're going to be seeing in Sacramento in the coming months.
Let me thank Jane for the call and appreciate hearing from you. Let me hear from another listener, and that's you, Douglas. Thanks for waiting. You're on with us.
Yes, hi. I hope you can hear me.
I can.
Great. Listen, I'm going to make a couple quick comments and then get off the phone. Listen, about PG&E, here's the biggest deal. We need to reform the PUC before we even pay attention to PG&E. PUC is corrupt. It's called the Public Utilities Commission. There have been problems with PG&E for decades, and they refuse to enforce the law. That's issue number one. Issue number two is regarding corporate taxes and Prop 13 and everything. We've got to raise corporate taxes. When we look at things like San Francisco doing with Twitter, giving them great breaks, this is really a major problem. Individuals pay taxes. Corporations don't pay their fair share. We're supposed to be of, for, and by the people, not of, for, and by corporations. The last thing I want to say is that one of your personalities spoke about Prop 13 being something that basically locks in wealth. This is willful ignorance on that person's part. This is someone who is a youthful person who does not know what it was like in the 60s and 70s when my parents' taxes, property taxes in Mountain View, were nearly raised by 10% every year. We would not be able to stay in California if there was not a Prop 13. You take Prop 13 away, you're going to watch this state disappear from a population standpoint, because residential taxes will go through the roof, because there will not be any corporate taxes. We need to get back to of, for, and by the people. Thank you.
All right, Bye-bye. Douglas, thank you. You covered a lot there. Marisa, you want to respond?
You know, I'm not here advocating for one side or the other around Prop 13, and I haven't seen anyone on any side of the political aisle say that it should be fully repealed. The point I was making was that it has benefited, you know, one or two generations of folks and is not giving the same benefits to new arrivals or to younger people. There's a lot of research around that. I'm not the only one who says that. I think the question is, you know, how can we as a state do both? How can we help younger families stay here and thrive and obviously protect people? I mean, I don't think anybody wants to see seniors on fixed incomes pushed out of their homes. But we do have a situation where, you know, it is almost impossible for many people to enter the housing market in any way, shape, or form. And I think that that is something that we're, you know, continuing to grapple with, and that's becoming more and more evident as prices continue to rise.
And again, Marisa Lagos is correspondent with KQED's California Politics and Government Desk and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown podcast. Katie Orr is also with us, politics and government reporter for KQED. And I want to welcome Chris Haney, who I said is going to be with us for a bit as well. He's executive director of the California Budget and Policy Center. And welcome, Chris. Good to have you.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. We got a $209 billion budget, which most Californians seem to like and support. But is it really square with this ambitious program that we're going to hear, I think, Governor Newsom detail for us coming up in a matter of minutes?
Yeah, I think it mostly squares. I think what people may not realize is just how much this year's budget proposal from the governor actually puts aside in terms of savings and trying to help pay down some liabilities on the pension side of things. There are some major commitments in terms of the money that's coming in being put aside for those kinds of investments in a very Jerry Brown-like way, in fact. And then the governor has made these put these other plans in place that involve some one-time and early investments in this year's budget proposal that would then carry forward with some plans for investment in future years. And I think most of the attention has gone to some of those major proposals, but there's also a lot of fiscal conservatism built into the proposal so far.
Explain that, because, you know, a lot of people read this budget with, and we've been talking about all these expenses, early childhood and college education and much more housing and so forth, that adds up to a lot of revenue being spent. Where is the conservative side of that?
Well, part of it is the luxury of having a very good budget to deal with this year that actually has a significant increase in the revenues that are coming in because of how well the economy has been doing over time, which affords the ability to both make some investments and put some money aside to save for a rainy day and to pay down some other liabilities. That trio is hard to do in a year when you don't have all as much revenue as the governor has the luxury of dealing with this year. But the way that a good example of how he's going about this is his proposal on the universal preschool front, where he is making some increases in the slots that are available, but then using some one-time funding from this year's proposed budget to make some investments in the underlying infrastructure that would then allow a significant expansion of the number of slots in future years if the revenue is available. So there's sort of both a, you know, incremental adjustment for this year, but then an investment made to try to build up in the future.
What about his ambition that he's made very clear that he wants this rainy day fund not only to expand, but to be one of the strongest in the nation?
Well, I think the rainy day fund is something he views very much as a success of good state leadership, and he's been very laudatory of Governor Brown's leadership and of the state legislature's leadership, and his own budget proposal would make significant investments there as well. I think, you know, both leading the nation in terms of having a large buffer is something he will be proud of, but I think it also goes to wanting the state to be able to actually weather a small to moderate recession, which is what the size of the current rainy day fund looks like it would probably be able to do.
There's also a good deal of talk from the governor about ameliorating the homeless crisis that we have as he sees it, and that's going to cost a lot, isn't it?
Well, it's another area where he's making some one-time investments. So one of the things that he has done is actually taking some of this year's additional revenues, and he's providing those to the cities in order for them to provide the emergency triage centers that they have been providing as the homelessness crisis has ramped up. And then he's taking other revenues that have come in through ballot measures that were passed in November, and he's allowing those revenues to be used more quickly, or he's releasing them so that the communities have them. So it's another example of using the revenues that are there to help with some investments right now. And then the question is, you know, what of those investments are ongoing, and what does that look like in future years?
Yeah, just one other quick question, Chris, because we talked about the plan that may involve a tax for safe drinking water, which has caused a good deal of consternation. There are those who say he could just take it out of the rainy day fund.
Well, you know, it's harder to take things out of the rainy day fund than you think. The rainy day fund, at least as it's constitutionally structured now, requires there to be an economic downturn where you actually see a decrease in your budget relative to prior years. So the rainy day fund isn't really a discretionary pot from which the governor and the legislature can pull funds from. If you get to a level where the rainy day fund is tapped out, where it basically reaches the requirement of 10% of the state budget, then there are a series of rules that say, okay, additional dollars after that can be put into one-time investments. And there's some difference of interpretation right now about whether the state has reached that 10% cap. The governor claims we're not there yet, and so is putting more dollars into the rainy day fund. Others may say that we're there, and therefore some of these dollars could be freed up for the kind of services you're talking about.
Chris Haney, thank you so much for joining us. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
It's Chris Haney, Executive Director of the California Budget and Policy Center. Let me go to more of your calls, and let's go to Celeste. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, thanks for taking my call and for the program. I just had a comment on, you've all touched on really important things, but I haven't really heard anyone speak of the need to improve our infrastructure. Like, I live in Kentfield and the...
I'm sorry, Celeste, you seem to... Celeste, are you there? No, I think we dropped the call, but she's talking about the bridge and infrastructure, Marissa.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we did see voters uphold Prop 6 uphold the gas tax increase. SB1 was the legislation that is supposed to help shore up our roads and bridges around the state. Caltrans has, you know, been doing those projects since before.
We've got concrete falling as well.
Yeah, well, right. And so, but I do think that that's another big question. I mean, we touched on high-speed rail. That's obviously a huge infrastructure project. And I think that, you know, this speaks to the toughness of governing. You have to be thinking about these long-term, bigger picture, you know, almost more philosophical questions. What's the future of our electrical grid? You also need to be literally filling the potholes. And so I think that a lot of times what we see is a sort of nod to those issues when, you know, politicians think that that's what people are really focused on. I don't think that we saw a huge amount of focus on that, for example, during the governor's race, but it's clearly one of the major functions of government. And so something that, you know, I think that as that SB1 money gets spent, we might see, maybe not this year, but in future years, some other proposals. But that was a heavy lift for the legislature, and I don't think they're eager to go back to another tax increase.
Well, it brings up another question, though, and Katie Orr, that is, there seems to be at least bipartisan will in Washington to move toward infrastructure changes, and we've got a Democratic legislature here. They were kind of much in step with Jerry Brown. How much are they going to be in step with Gavin Newsom, especially if he goes into a lot more expenditures with infrastructure, for example?
Well, you know, I think at this point, it's still early, but everyone appears to be getting along. The goals that Gavin Newsom has tend to align pretty closely with the goals of the Speaker of the Assembly and the Senate pro tem. In his budget presser, Gavin Newsom was giving shout-outs to lawmakers whose policies he had incorporated. He said that he had talked to people before he put his budget together so that, you know, they were all already sort of on the same page. I think what will be interesting is to see if there's any kind of power struggle. Does the legislature seek to assert itself in any way over Gavin Newsom versus letting him take the lead? I think that will be one of the biggest political points to watch moving forward with this administration.
And here's Sanjay. Sanjay, join us. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. I had a comment about, actually, I saw your comment about public transport and Merced and high-speed bullet train. And I've lived in the Bay Area, and I kind of think that the government and the decision-maker don't know what's going on. I've been here for 30 years. I'm a software engineer. I worked in the heart of Silicon Valley near Mountain View. My wife used to work in San Francisco, so we travel via BART. okay? And for a long time, the engineering Silicon Valley part was employment in Mountain View, Silicon Valley side, not in San Francisco. Only after 2008, young engineers only want to live in the big city, okay? And so now you have people being commuted by Google and Facebook in buses who live in San Francisco back to the heart of Silicon Valley, okay? And so it's not like people want to come from outside and go and work inside the San Francisco. Now, I'll give you an example of a stupid decision they made. BART expanded from Fremont going all the way to northern San Jose. Okay, the logic being I want to take people from further away into San Francisco. And it turns out they missed the opportunity of actually taking the BART to go to the heart of Silicon Valley. And if people in Pleasanton who could have taken the BART all the way into the heart of Silicon Valley, this would have had traffic go in both directions. The problem is the people making decisions never travel, do not know where employment is happening, do not know where companies are opening and where engineers want to work and not work. Okay? So I kind of see this BART decision as stupidity. You finally expanded the BART, but in the wrong direction, thinking that everybody wants to go to San Francisco. No, they don't. You want to try getting people into Silicon Valley from...
All right, Sanjay, I hear you, and you are coming in loud and clear, and I hear your concern, and... I thank you for the call. I also am going to have to say goodbye to Katie Orr now, and thank you for joining us, Katie. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be hearing more from Katie during KQED's live coverage of the governor's speech, which will be hosted by KQED's Scott Schaefer and Capital Public Radio's Ben Adler. And that's coming up at 11, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to another caller. Marisa's still with us, and Mike is with us from Hayward. Mike, join us.
Hi there. My question is kind of about, you know, a number of callers have brought up, and several of your guests have brought up, you know, making sure that the money goes to the right place, you know, and it's a common sort of trope, I guess. It's a common complaint about government that the money doesn't go to the right place and my taxes aren't being spent correctly and all this. And so as a result, you know, if you work in government, you have these layers and layers and layers of accountability. So there's this constant tension between accountability and efficiency, at least in my mind. And I'm kind of wondering if there's any appetite for, I realize there's always appetite for accountability, but I'm wondering if there's any appetite for efficiency as well, you know, in the new administration from the new governor.
Yeah, it's a kind of a broad but interesting question, a provocative one. Marisa Lagos?
Yeah, I mean, I will say Newsom, you know, comes from, again, as I mentioned earlier, a business background. And one thing that I think I was really happy to see, and it's totally in the weeds, so you probably haven't heard us talk about it a lot, but when he came out like that first week after his inauguration and did a press conference around wildfire prevention, one of the executive orders he signed was actually around our procurement process. So this, again, like your eyes are glazing over, but stick with me for a second.
No, I'm not. I'm thinking of other things that haven't come out that are in the weeds.
Well, so he basically is saying, look, in the past, it's taken so long for us to procure new technologies because of these like sort of bureaucracy and the process set out by the state that you have to take the lowest bidder and you have to do all these tests, that by the time we roll out new technology, it can be out of date. And so he's looking at sort of creative ways to do things like that. So not exactly the efficiencies maybe that the caller's talking about, but I do think that having somebody from a younger generation thinking about things like tech, how we can use technology to make government work better is interesting. And I think that Newsom, you know, I'll be watching to see how far he carries that if he runs into challenges, you know, with labor or other sort of processes that have been historically set up. There might need to be law changes to do some of these things. But I do think that there's a sense of that desire to kind of be a little more creative. We also saw him come in, for example, and, you know, order a new DMV director. And so trying to tackle some of the problems in that agency. So I do think that there's some of that. But, you know, I also think that saying government should be more efficient is really easy. And then where the rubber meets the road is like, you know, how to do that and how to do it in a way that actually results in not just like firing people wholesale and assuming that because, you know, you have less workers that we're more efficient. That's not always the case. And, you know, humans are where most of our government costs lay. And so that is something to consider, too, when we talk about employment and jobs.
Here's a listener who writes, good riddance, Jerry Brown, your Scrooge policies of cutting funds for education, civil servants, housing, the state courts, and more were disastrous. Welcome, Governor Gavin Newsom. I have lots of hope. And Damien says, I'd like to hear the governor answer if his promise to give free health care to illegal aliens is anything more than a political stunt.
Okay. Well, so we have, under Jerry Brown, already expanded Medi-Cal to undocumented youths under the age of 18. Newsom is embracing the idea of allowing that to continue for slightly older individuals. And I know that there are some people that think we should do that entirely. Clearly, this caller doesn't agree with that. It is Medi-Cal, so that is mostly funded by federal funds. And, you know, I think what supporters of that would say is that it's a preventative measure. If if kids don't get sick, there's a lot of costs that we don't incur later down the line in emergency rooms and in other places. But that is certainly something that Democrats writ large have embraced in California.
Well, we've certainly heard a lot from listeners about what they would like the priorities to be in the governor's State of the State speech. And you can stay tuned now and hear KQED's live Anchorage coverage of Governor Newsom's State of the State address. And thank you, Marisa Lagos. Always good to have you with us.
Thanks, Michael.
Marisa Lagos, again, is correspondent with KQED's California Politics and Government Desk and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown podcast. We also spoke with Katie Orr, a politics and government reporter for KQED, and Ted Lempert of Children Now, as well as Chris Haney from the California Budget and Policy Center. Thank you for being a part of the program. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. And you can continue this discussion online about priorities in the governor's speech. You can also listen to it because it's coming up. But go online at kqed.org/forum and talk about your priorities. Keep the conversation going. Thank you for being with us on this morning's forum. We'll be back with you on the morrow, if all goes according to plan. And I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.